This is Robbie.
She wants me to say who I am. This is Wendell. You didn't know who I was. I'm making her do the talking.
Stop it. Mm.
No, this is what we're sending in.
No, it's not.
Yes, it is.
Oh, gosh. This is the real us. Hope you all are doing well. We're doing great, actually. It's been a long 5 months, but we've adjusted and we're doing quite well right now. I've learned things during this 5 months that I needed to learn about myself. I'm learning to be still and just be still and just sit and listen and reflect and think about who Robbie is and the journey I'm on with Jesus. Wendell?
She's been working her butt off all summer. She didn't say that. She's been putting up beans and corn and tomatoes and okra and crowder peas and cucumbers and relish and jam and jelly. And so she's not been sitting still. So anyway, I'm telling on her. But we're doing real well. We have fallen back in a deeper love with each other. It's kind of cool. We fought for a little while because we weren't used to being around each other for so long or so much. But it's worked out really well. And we are boyfriend and girlfriend. And we miss you all and want to be back with you soon. We want some hugs.
Yes, most definitely.
Yeah, we want some hugs.
Lots of hugs. Not just some, lots of hugs.
Yeah. So, hope you have a good week.
Take care. Love y'all.
sun sets free is free in me. Who the sun sets free is free in me. Who the sun sets free is free in me.
Sing it one more time.
Who the sun sets free is free in me.
Been trying to get a hold of me on Thursday using Wi-Fi, it ain't working. Anyway, so I'm Wendell, living loved by Jesus. I'm recovering from spiritual and emotional abuse. That is much better than it used to be. Addiction to food, not so good sometimes. Work, better at that. And control, you'd have to ask my wife. But she would tell you the truth. I've had issues with porn, alcohol, rage, panic, and depression. And that's little old me.
Hi, Wendell.
Hey, Lou.
I'm Lewis. I'm a grateful believer in Jesus, and I'm in recovery for racial and physical abuse when I was a kid. And I always struggle with anger and trust. I'm here recently it's been a fair amount of anxiety, restlessness, isolation, and depression.
Hey, Lou. So here we are, week after week, come to see you. Want to talk about something kind of weird today. Well, I guess we'll just go in the front door and then we'll come around to what we're really going to talk about. But we're going to touch on codependency. And if you read my blog Monday, you'll see that it's a side street of codependency, but it's codependency nonetheless. I kind of redefined codependency in this blog a little bit. Over time, I've kind of felt like it needed a little tweaking. Anyway, so to me, this is me, it's just my opinion. Codependency is me using or abusing, and then there's another word I think is important, or utilizing. I think utilizing is different than using or abusing. Utilizing is a pragmatic term of you use this screwdriver to screw in that particular screw. It's utilizing. Using always has a negative context to it. I feel like you're using me.
Right.
Utilizing is just pragmatically this is what works. So codependency is me using, abusing, or utilizing another person. And here's again where I think I've tweaked it a little bit. I used to say to help myself feel better about myself, but I really think it goes deeper than that. I think it's you use, abuse, or utilize somebody else to help you define who you are, or to discover who you are. So it's a little bit different. I don't know who I am without you. I don't know who I am without you telling me who I am, or telling me what I need to do to be me, or telling me what I don't need to do to be me, telling me what I need to believe in order to be a good version of me, mm-hmm. that kind of thing. So that the basic definition of codependency is that to use, abuse, or utilize someone to find out your true identity or what you think your true identity is.
I think that's where, and I think we're going to get to this. We didn't have our long conversation about what we were going to talk about this week, so.
you get to see the raw version.
I'll be a little scattered. But I think where my definition, I'm tracking with your definition.
Yeah.
My definition, and that this may be what you're headed towards, is it doesn't necessarily have to be a person.
Right. Right.
I mean, classically, we've always defined it as being codependent on another person.
Your husband, your wife, your husband, mom, your dad,
wife,
whatever.
Your dad, whoever.
Yeah.
But there are other things.
Yeah. Yeah.
That you can, I mean, and if you want to know some, you know what, there's other folks that have takes on this as well.
Yeah.
You know, Andrew's written some stuff on it, and you've written in the past about it as well. And that's where I get, you know, that's where what I think is important about what we're going to talk about today.
Yeah. Well, he just segued right into it perfectly.
He thinks I don't read his blog.
Shame on me. So, I mean, we're going to talk about, like, for lack of a better term, cultural dependency, which could go to denominational codependency, political codependency, gender codependency, lifestyle codependency,
nationality.
National codependency, racial codependency, socioeconomic codependency, age codependency, or generational codependency. People of my generation say it this way, so that's why I believe this way. So you really don't know how you believe, it's because your generation tells you how to believe. That's the idea. So cultural codependency is not finding my identity with another person. It's finding my identity with a group. And it's interesting, there's pushback with people. They say, so you shouldn't identify yourself as a Christian, or you shouldn't identify yourself as a Republican or a Democrat. You shouldn't do that. And it's one thing to say I vote this way.
Mm-hmm.
It's another thing if when you say you're a Republican or a Democrat, basically what you're saying is, I just believe what they tell me to believe. They put out the platform, and I go with the platform.
Yeah.
Republican or Democrat, either one.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing with denomination. Well, a good Baptist would never, a good Methodist would never, you know. Why do you say that? Because I'm a Methodist, you know. Good Catholic believes blah. Oh, okay. What do you believe? Well, I'm a Catholic. I believe like the Catholics believe. That's cultural dependency. You know, when we... So, that is so unhealthy.
Yeah.
To me, it's so claustrophobic that it locks me into a way of thinking, a way of acting, places I can and can't go, activities I can and cannot be involved in. Why? Well, because my group has determined this for me, you know? And so I don't have freedom to discover who I am and who, what I want to do and what I feel passionate about. Because, right, you know, a good Republican wouldn't do that. A good Democrat wouldn't do that. So I can't go there. And so I think it's important to realize that we can identify ourselves. I mean, obviously, we're two old, fat, white men. So, who are you? Well, I'm Wendell, and part of my identity is I'm an old, fat, white guy. You know, period. But when you start saying, well, old, fat, white guys don't do that, or old, fat, white guys don't believe that way, or old, fat, white guys aren't allowed to feel that way, I'm like, whoa. Yeah, that's a different thing altogether.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
It absolutely is. Because it takes away your... It takes away your uniqueness.
Yeah.
When you try to pigeonhole.
Yeah.
Based on anything, but culturally, when you try to pigeonhole a group.
Yeah.
It takes away the uniqueness of the individual.
Yeah.
And that's part of what, you know, when we say that we have, that we're codependent. We are surrendering part of our uniqueness when we do that.
Right.
And it, you know, so you're right. So when you say old fat dudes don't do whatever.
Yeah.
You know, old fat dudes are all, Republicans, or old fat dudes are all Democrats, or old fat dudes are all this or all that. You take away my uniqueness.
Yeah, and I take away your freedom to be you.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And you're issued that freedom.
Yeah.
By God, and to be frank, by our Constitution.
Yeah.
You're issued that right to be who you are. And we live in a nation that is more and more saying, no, you have to belong to this group or that. And when you do, you have to stay in lockstep with what they say.
Mm-hmm. There's no middle of the road.
No. No, think. Do not think for yourself.
No.
So... one thing that I did when I was writing this blog is I was thinking, so the one extreme is I don't make a move without first checking the political manual, the denominational manual, whatever. Because every denomination has their own pool rules. People will push back against that. It's some of them posted on the front of the church. This is our belief system right here. They have a list of them. And it's not the Ten Commandments.
No.
It's their own personal...
I mean, think about it. The United Methodists have the Book of Discipline.
The Book of Discipline.
Okay? It's our rule book. A lot of Baptist churches, not all of them, but a lot of Baptist churches can quote the Baptist Faith and Message to you.
Yeah.
You know? The Catholic Church is Vatican II.
Yeah.
And... you know, in all denominations, there are a lot of people in those churches who have no idea what those are.
Right. But they are very present,
very prevalent.
And become a squeaky wheel that pushes against them, and you will know about them very quickly.
Yeah. You'll get them quoted.
Yeah. But usually if you are a part of that group long enough, you just kind of intuit how to behave and how to believe, mm-hmm. and when to speak up and when to be quiet. Right. So they don't have to bring out that book on you. It's not the Bible. It's their own book. But, okay, so that's the extreme.
Right.
And it could be political, racial, theological, denominational, you name it. You know, every group has their own little manifesto, their own little whatever. That's one extreme. The other extreme is complete and total individualism. Don't bother me. I'm doing my own thing. But I need your help over here with this thing. No, I'm doing it. We're both trying to fix this social problem. Don't you want to work together? No, I'm doing my own thing. You do your thing, I'll do my thing. Because as soon as I start working with you, I lose my freedom. As soon as I start working with you, somebody's going to think I'm codependent with you. And I may even become codependent with you. Can't have that.
Mm-mm.
So that's the other extreme.
Right.
Of just a bunch of loose cannons firing off in every direction. And it's like spilling gas on the floor. You can't run a car off that. You have to put it in a tank. You have to confine it in a tank to make the car run. You can't just pour it out on the floor. So, as I wrote that blog, I thought, okay, so I hear what the one extreme is, and that's what I'm writing about, is this radical codependency on a group. I'm letting them define who I am, what I believe, what I can say, what I can't say. I'm letting them define that.
Right.
The other extreme is this anarchy, for lack of a better term. So what is a healthy way to do community? And ta-da, I look at Pathway, and I think we have a huge divergence of, we have Republicans, Democrats, Independents, gay, straight, white, black, Methodist, Baptist, Pentecostals, Catholics, Seventh-day Adventists.
Church of Christ.
Church of Christ. I mean, we got people who say every single word of the Bible was dictated by God himself. We got other people who say it's a beautiful story that's, by and large, metaphorical or whatever. You get all these extremes,
mm-hmm.
and yet we can come together and we say, for the common health of individuals in this group, we're going to work together without giving up our individualism. In fact, I'm going to celebrate your difference from me. I'm not going to try to change you to be a clone of me. I'm going to celebrate who you are as an individual. But we got Billy Bob out here who's bleeding out with depression. You want to go help him. Instead of you saying, no, I'll take care of it by myself. You want to do it later, you do it by yourself. But no, we can't link arms because we're too different. We link arms and say, no, we can do this together. We can help them.
Yeah.
So that, to me, I got a tickle in my throat. That, to me, is kind of the middle of these two extremes. It's the healthy place where we live. And we don't have that nailed down in that way. But we're discovering it.
Yeah. I think part of the reason we don't have it nailed down is because every day we run into folks that don't think like any of us.
Right.
And
the situation changes.
And the situation changes. And we're open to that. And I think that's part of the, you know, the magic of Pathway.
Yeah.
Is that it is an ever-changing community. I mean, it's really what community is supposed to be. Diverse people with the community, coming together with the community in mind, not the individual.
Yeah. Yeah. But the individual is always celebrated.
Yes.
But the individual is not forced into any mold of any kind.
Right.
You don't have to get in lockstep. I mean, we welcome atheists, agnostics, whatever. Anybody who is hurting and wants to be real could be there.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's what makes it work. But, okay, so let's get back to what we're talking about. So when I was in college, I read a guy, and I don't even know if you can find his books anymore. I think my son Jacob has the two books I had. I hope he still has them, because I'd like to read them again. But he wrote, the guy's named Richard Weaver. And Richard Weaver wrote one book called Visions of Order, and he wrote another one called Ideas Have Consequences. And maybe they can be found in a used bookstore, I don't know. But I remember when I was in college, he was describing how our culture, not just American culture, but how culture tends to try to squeeze people into a mold and take away their individuality and say, if you're from this town and this state, this is how we act. And any other variance is not welcome here. And so he was writing about that dynamic way back in the 70s. I was reading this. And the guy was a scholar, and he was not some kind of radical, crazy revolutionary. He was a scholar. He was probably fairly conservative by nature, but he's very astute and very observant of culture and human nature. And I remember reading that for the first time. It was so deep I had to read every sentence like two or three times. But it was so good that I did.
Yeah.
And I remember the anger, not a selfish anger, but I think righteous anger that welled up inside of me, saying, no, I respect myself more than this, to allow my culture, the TV culture, the political culture, the sports culture, whatever it is, to let them mold me into some mold. And the anger in me that came up, well, that was a defining moment in my life. And so I think the reason I wrote about cultural codependency is for nothing else than to say, this is something good for all of us to think about. And if you feel angry that you're being molded or told what you're supposed to think or told how you're supposed to act, and you smell a rat, you feel manipulated, you feel controlled, that anger is probably the best feeling you could feel, because it could be the starter fluid to get you started, you know, out of that. That's a very male term, sorry about that. Could be the yeast that gets notarized. There you go. So let's.
I like bread.
Yeah, I like bread more than I like driving. So you see what I'm saying? That
mm-hmm.
I think sometimes we have to chew on some of these things to realize, no, you're not going to do that to me. And that's not a selfish thing. It's not an arrogant thing. It's I have respect for the person God had in mind when he created me. I'm not going to try to force him into that artificial mold. It's about respect. And not in a self-centered, selfish way.
I'm going to ask you to unpack something, because I think it's relevant to what you're talking about. In your story, you've said how you became culturally, you didn't use these words, culturally codependent with the denomination that you were in.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I was.
Do you see, or can you pinpoint a point where you got mad because by God, that wasn't going to happen to you,
yeah,
and then it did? Was there a point where you came to that realization that what Weaver was talking about
applied to my denomination?
Not just to your denomination, but you personally.
Yeah.
I mean, it did apply to your denomination. It applies to almost all denominations, but applied to you personally.
Yeah. I kind of happened in the reverse. I remember preaching and teaching.
Was this in college or seminary?
The class was in college.
Okay. Was he a theologian? Weaver?
Was he what?
Was he a theologian?
No, he was more of a historian. And, yeah, he's more of a historian.
Okay.
Because he wrote another book called The Southern Tradition at Bay, where he studied Southern culture. So he's more of a historian. But I studied him in philosophy class, because he's very philosophical in his approach. Why do we do what we do? Why do we believe what we believe? So that's a philosophical question, more than a historical.
Okay.
So that's where but those seeds were planted. And so when I got in, when I was ordained and got my first church, our church had rules against, and don't laugh, this was the church we were in. They had rules against the manufacture, sale, and use of any kind of tobacco. You couldn't be in that church and grow it, you couldn't be in that church and sell it, and you couldn't be in that church and use it in any way. Smoke, dip, chew, you couldn't. They had rules against secret societies like the Masons and the Mooses or whatever, you know, the Moose Lodge, whatever. They had rules against that. They had rules against, trying to think of, those were some of the ones that stuck out. So I'm trying to start my first church. Started in a home Bible study. We had a lot of recovering drug addicts in it and recovering alcoholics in this home Bible study. And so it finally formed into a church, and we decided to become part of that denomination. So, okay, according to the Book of Discipline, which you mentioned, these rules are in there, and I knew some of the people were smokers, some of them were drinkers. Oh, that there was a rule against that too. No sale or consumption of alcohol of any kind, you know. Take all the NyQuil you want, but don't drink a beer. Never made sense to me. So, anyway, I had people who wanted to join my church. I'm sorry, you can't. My boss tells me that the book says you're a Mason, so you can't join. Some of the best people I ever knew. Mm-hmm. Love Jesus like crazy. I'm sorry you can't join because you smoke. You know? Or you work in a quick sack where they sell the cigarettes. Where you can't. That's when it first started, like, this doesn't make sense. What really got me kicked out of that church is I remember a couple months before the little meeting that took place.
That denomination.
Yeah. In my local church there. The little meeting took place where I realized my ministry here is over. They didn't ask me to leave. Well, one or two of them kind of did. But anyway, two or three months before that, I remember getting up front and preaching a sermon about racism and homophobia. That did not go over well at all. Because it was a lily white, right-wing, white conservative, yeah, church. And if there had been a black person in it the whole time I was there, I don't remember. And it definitely did not tolerate any gays or lesbians at all. Don't even try to come through the front door. And I knew that was not right, and so I finally said to myself, I've got to get up front and say something about this. That was the beginning of the end there. I don't know if that answers your question, but I was in that denomination 25 years as a pastor, and over that 25 years, the pressure just got greater and greater. The tension got greater and greater between what I felt in my heart to be right and what the denomination told me was right.
Yeah.
And when I finally left, when they stripped my papers away, the person who would have been my boss, my superior, just, you know, argued right and left. No, we're not a rule-based denomination. We're grace-based. And I said, there's no way in the world you are rule-based. No, those are rules, but that's not what we're based on. Then how come I'm getting kicked out? You know, you're rule-based. And I mean, this is getting way personal. But I said, when this conversation is over, and he kept saying, oh, I'm your friend, oh, I want to help you. Don't you want to come back and be in the fold and whatever? And I said, when this conversation is over, I will never see you again. You're not my friend. And I wasn't saying in the mean way. I was just saying the truth.
Yeah.
You're not my friend. We will never see each other again. And we didn't. We haven't. He's passed since then, but and so I think it was kind of like Jesus told the disciples, you shake the dust off your feet. You know,
mm-hmm.
And I've not looked back since. I found a place here that is grace-based. This church is not perfect, mm-hmm. by any means, and nobody here would say it is, mm-hmm. all the way up to the senior pastors. They would not say it is. But this is a grace-based group of people. If we're not gracious, we're pursuing grace.
Yeah.
And we're letting it pursue us.
Yeah.
So.
And there's grace for that.
Yes.
Even.
Yes. And what I love about this larger church, and especially Pathway, is you can come any lifestyle, gay, straight, doesn't matter, any color, any belief system, you can come as an atheist and be embraced in love. Nobody's going to try to fix you. You can come any way you want to, and you're just going to be loved. And I think this resonates with my heart.
Yeah.
I don't feel like I'm being pressed into a mold. I feel like I'm being invited deeper into grace.
Yeah.
There's a big difference.
Oh, huge difference.
Huge difference.
You're absolutely right.
So, I don't know. Probably we've said enough. Do you want to say any more?
No, I think we've covered it.
I think there'll be so much of what we're saying, you and I, these last few, in the next couple of weeks, I already told you what we're going to talk about. It's so new and fresh that it leaves a lot of wheels spinning. Like, what? You know?
Mm-hmm.
New terms, new concepts, new ideas, new thoughts. And all I would ask is, if you're watching this, chew on it before you react for or against it. Chew on it.
Yeah.
Let it ruminate in your mind some, and entertain the possibilities of it. Because we're not... Neither one of us are in preacher or teacher mode here.
No.
We're in exploration mode.
Yeah.
You know, what if? You know, just exploring. So we're not trying to lay something heavy on people. We're just trying to say, you know, this is some of the stuff we've observed, and I think it bears talking about.
Yeah.
And further exploration. Is that fair?
That's a good way to put that. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so we're about ready to go. We'll remind you again, our step studies, 8 steps to hope and healing, are going to start September the 8th on Tuesday night, 6:30, women's in the Welcome Center, men in the Cup of Hope. I've just printed up the booklets today and hole punched them. I'm looking at them right up there on my desk. I'm going to put them in notebooks, 3 ring binders, and they're going to be in a crate down by the front door of the church. You can come pick yours up. They're free. If you're going to be in the group, you can come pick it up. I will make sure and tell you when they're available. So don't come to the church looking for them until I tell you they're in the crate. You'll either get a text, an email, or we'll talk about it next week on the podcast.
Yeah.
So, all right. Ready for the serenity prayer?
Sure, why not?
All righty. Here we go. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Living one day at a time, enjoying one moment at a time, accepting hardship as the pathway to peace, taking as Jesus did this sinful world as it is, not as I would have it, trusting that you will make all things right if I surrender to your will, so that I may be reasonably happy in this life and supremely happy with you forever in the next. Amen. Keep coming back.
God loves you.
And we do too.
Yes, we do.
Yes.
We!
Yes.